And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Indeed. And on this historic day, this is the inauguration of the 45th President of the United States, the 58th inauguration that took place. We covered that for a couple of hours today. You have to stop at some point just to avoid being redundant. It's not coverage for the sake of coverage. It's coverage for the sake of news. And of course, during that time, we had noted that many of the protesters, or there's many protests during the parade as well, and several hundred protesters were out. Some say as many as 1,000 along and near the parade route, but different cities as well. But in D.C. in particular, a couple hundred, I think 217 were arrested. Some police officers were treated for injuries. But nonetheless, there's nothing major that took place. And of course, now tonight are the inaugural balls. My question is, look, man, I'm tired right now. It's 71 years old, or 70 years, seven months and 7 days old, Donald Trump right today. Man, somebody would have to be, you know, taping me to a pole to stay upright. Seriously. What a long day.
He's got the energy, apparently. He's got the stamina. And he saw that on the campaign trail.
My goodness. Although, I'll tell you this, Health Masters products are fantastic. But still, come on, man. You know, seriously. But in standing there, you know, for the parade, that was a long parade. I got to tell you, that was a long, long parade. But, you know, do you remember it being that long, folks? It's just a question. Do you remember the previous ones being like this? Or is this just, I mean, or I don't know. Or wasn't it publicized as much? Or are we paying more attention now than we were a couple
probably
of years
that.
Ago?
Probably paying more attention now.
All right. I mean, I know there was no change. But, boy, you know, Donald Trump really took to the woodshed the previous administrations in his inaugural speech, seriously saying, you know, your time's over, basically. And Joe, I know you've got some things to say about that. We've got a great program for you lined up tonight. We've got but before we do, let me tell you, Portions of the Nice Broadcast brought to you by Bamboo HR. Have you heard of this company, Bamboo HR? Oh, wow. If you own a small business or manage one, are you responsible for human resources, records, and paperwork for your company? And are you overwhelmed? You got to try this company. I've done it. Bamboo HR. You got to visit bamboohr.com. Click on the mic and enter our code HH to get a free 14-day trial. Try it. You'll wonder how you ever got along without it. I've tried it, used it, taken it for a test drive. It is fantastic. Man, it manages your employees in terms of time and such. It's one simple central system for keeping me organized and detailed records for every employee. That's bamboohr.com. Bamboohr.com. One more time, bamboohr.com. Click on HH for a free 14-day trial. More on that later. But, yeah, so what's on your radar?
Well, there's a couple of post-inauguration things to look at. One is Rachel Maddow and Chris Matthews. Chris Matthews called the
Hitlerian
Trump speech Hitlerian. Rachel Maddow says it was militant and it was dark and hard to hear also. These people are going to lose all their relevancy. They're not reporting the events as a journalist. They're reporting them with their own twisted, misguided logic and insanity. the only people that are going to continue to watch these programs and the other news organizations that continue to just to bash Trump are those who already hate him. And Trump did some, there's some interesting things going on with the White House website. There have been the removal of all references to climate change on the White House website, as well as taking down special rights for LGBT people, which is the way it should be. Everybody's equal under the law. There shouldn't be any special rights, special groups, special protections, because everybody should be protected by the same law. And I think that will anger some people. They will take it as an insult because their group is not being held up to some kind of endangered, protected class. But it does make a lot of sense when you step back and look at it from a common sense perspective. And then there are, you have other things happening. The ACLU launched their first lawsuit against Trump already. I don't know for what. CNN did a piece, "Dear President, Welcome to the Real World," where they are already trying to take him to task for things that he hasn't done.
That's the American justice system for you, then.
The climate change.
Let's sue him. Let's sue him. Ah!
And another thing I found today, in China, you know, they were not allowed to show any live feeds of the inauguration, and they told all the media they were not allowed to report on the inauguration. Even American journalists over there were taken to Twitter saying how they were being censored or banned from talking about Trump or making it the focus. It could not be the focus of a lot of stations, and they could not show the live stream. And apparently that's due to their uncertainty as to how to handle Trump and not wanting a populist-type movement to sweep through their communist nation. But back to the climate change, I wanted to touch on this. There's an interesting article on climatedepot.com. All references to climate change deleted from White House website at noon today. And the article goes on to actually, and I'm not familiar with this website, but it goes on to say that this is a good thing. They even got a quote from a meteorologist and Weather Channel founder, John Coleman, who used one word to describe the White House climate website changes, which was hooray. And again, all references to climate change have been deleted from the White House website at 11:59 a.m., 12 o'clock, right when he was sworn in. And I think that's a smart thing to do to a degree. And Obama had a big climate change page where it had many different offshoots and hyperlinks to go from and listed all the different policies and things they were doing to help battle climate change. But I think the sooner we understand, and Stan Deo talks about this a lot, how it's not just the Earth that goes through temperature fluctuations. It's based on the solar system is going through the same fluctuations, and that's due to what's happening with the sun. And a big problem that a lot of climate change, anti-climate change people, man-made climate change people have is the fact that the government thinks that they can regulate the climate the way they want to. And I don't think that's possible. So taking a more scientific approach instead of a junk science approach is the right thing to do. And I think we will see that with Trump. There's also a lot of articles showcasing the quality of people, the protesters at the inauguration, which there's a good story on PJ Media. It says the faces of the ugly liberal left. And they'd said that way because they showed all these people in hoods and you know, black anarchists and Satanist gear. And
I wonder if the protesters are going to sue PJ Media now.
And they were just saying how, you know, it would be best for Democrats if these people weren't out the way they were, and how if this is what the, you know, far left is looking like, they lack all morality and values, and they make the point that, you know, middle America would be scared to see the type of people that are against Trump, and judging by who's against him and protesting against him, you can judge what kind of person he is. That's what the point the article makes, saying that, you know, if you look at his enemies, he's doing something right.
So, yeah, if you want to know who a man is, look at his enemies. I believe that to be true. If you want to know a man's character, look at his enemies.
And just a quick update after this segment, next segment, before Dr. Ted Brewer joins us, excuse me, we're going to be joined by Samuel Culper, who is a 4 years Army veteran, and 8 year private contractor who teaches military intelligence gathering techniques to preparedness-minded civilians. He's the editor of Forward Observer.
Yeah.
And he'll be with us in the next segment, which will be should be very interesting. He's a first-time guest, and I'm sure we're going to hear more from him in the future. And just as I thought, the Financial Times, there's an article on Drudge about China censoring the inauguration.
Yeah, and there have been many websites hit, by the way. I just want to tell you this. Many websites hit by DDoS attacks originating from China and from Korea. And I don't know what that's about, but just take that to heart. Take that, understand that.
So, yeah, the updated numbers that you talked about, because there was only 100 protesters arrested, but 200-plus protesters arrested. And is that your computer? Is that me? That's me. That's in still live Inauguration Day protest coming from the RT feed on their website. Still ongoing. About the protest, I saw a few things in from cities around the country. Portland boarded up, some of the stores boarded up a lot of their windows and said they were preparing for protest, which they're obviously preparing for more than protests if they're boarding up their storefront windows in downtown Portland. But there are, as expected, a number of events, protest events, scheduled around the country for tonight and this weekend. And I would urge folks, wherever you are, if you're in a city, to do some research before you find yourself in a situation you might not want to be in. I think they're going to be, the protests around the country are going to be a lot worse than what we saw at the inauguration today. People will love and look for any excuse to get out there and cause trouble, especially younger people. And they're going to take advantage of that, I believe. And I don't think it'll be like the Ferguson, Missouri, kind of type riots around the country, but it could get a little out of hand. And I guarantee that the police and all across the country are preparing for it. If the storefronts are preparing for it in different cities, so are the police.
You know, it's interesting. You look at countries like, well, Sarajevo and other places, and you look at the people. Some of these people are young people, well-dressed, intelligent-looking, college-educated or college-brainwashed. And that's a different kind of protester than you've got the framework who appear that way, then of course the masses on the fringes. I just have a problem with all of this. These protesters, I do. They're not protesters.
Well, be one thing,
they're rioters.
They were protesting.
They're rioters.
But a lot of these people, if you look back at what's happening around the inauguration, they knew what they were getting into. They have goggles. They all have, some type of face masks and hood on. They were prepared for tear gas, pepper spray. And then I saw Larry King. Did you see that limo that was broken? And then
yes.
That was Larry King's limo. He was inside a studio.
Oh, really?
Doing an interview. Yeah, yeah. He tweeted out how his limo was vandalized and then how it was put on fire. And he said he was all right, and his driver was a little shaken up. But
couldn't hear out of his one ear, I think, for a while is what I heard. But
yeah, you're right. These are not protesters. These are people who came looking for trouble. Bless you. And they're going to continue throughout the country. Back to what Rachel Maddow and Chris Matthews were talking about. I want to read to you what Rachel Maddow said, because I kind of skipped over this part of it. When it's really important, because it shows you how far out of touch and how far away from the truth these people are perceiving things to be. Now, what she says is as follows. As Donald Trump's inauguration ceremony came to close, Rachel Maddow commented that America's new president struck an alarming note through much of his speech earlier today. Trump used his speech to talk about America's first mantra and his various campaign promises to lead America into a new order. Even so, Trump did talk at length about the nation's problems, and Rachel Maddow reacted by noting the contrast between Trump and the more optimistic, hopeful speeches of former President Obama. And that's what she said. It was militant, and it was dark, Maddow said. The crime, the gangs, the drugs, this American carnage, despair, decay. You can't imagine the outgoing president giving a speech like that. Now, I want to go back over this whole paragraph because it's very... I don't know what world she lives in. It was militant and dark, is what she first describes the speech as. And then she says this, the crime, the gangs, the drugs, this American carnage, despair, decay. I don't know what she's even referring to, unless she's talking about the overall state of our nation and how far it has gone downhill since Obama took office. But I doubt that. As she, next sentence, she says, you can't imagine the outgoing president giving a speech like that. And that I agree with. Barack Obama would have never gave a speech talking about putting American people first, putting the country first, putting the needs of the people of the country first. Many of his speeches, he talked about himself, and it was polar opposites to see what Trump said versus what we've had for the last, you know, 8, 12, however many years. So Matt, I went on to say that Trump's speech was reminiscent of nationalistic trends in America around World War II, and she used the Isolationist American First Committee as her prime example. And she goes on to say, the American First Committee is something that means a specific thing in this country. To repurpose it now, not that far down the historical path, it's hard. It's hard to hear. Now, I was unfamiliar with American First. And after Matt's commentary, Chris Matthews praised the imagery Trump used about rejuvenating America, but then said it was Hitlerian. The speech was Hitlerian. So, as expected, the media on the left... And one thing that I wanted to talk about the media, what they're... One of the talking points in the mainstream media today was trying to poke remarks about the number of people who were at the inauguration. It looked filled up to me. I haven't seen any estimates or counts. People said there was, the media said there was going to be about 900,000 people there. But what I find interesting, I think they're comparing it to Obama's first inauguration, but how come they never mentioned the crowd size Trump's gained during the presidential campaign at, you know, 10, 15, 20,000 people at multiple locations every day? They never once talked about the size of Trump's crowds during the campaign, on the campaign trail. But during the inauguration, they're trying to undermine him by understating the size of the audience. Excuse me. Another CNN anchor called the crowd vanilla ice cream because he said it lacked any diversity of people. But if you go back and look, I think he can find much diversity there. So overall, it was a success. The smooth transition of power happened without incident, as was expected.
Yep.
And as we've been talking about, I think the uphill battle starts now. But there seems to be two camps of people on the internet. I've been reading a lot of comments today, especially from the Chris Matthews and then the Rachel Maddow story.
That was amazing.
If you read those comments, there's at least 1,000 on the Rachel Maddow one. It's on Mediate. It's titled, It Was Militant and It Was Dark, and then it was Hitlerian was the Chris Matthews one. But you have, and the trend didn't really start, but it was put out in the forefront during the last election cycle, where you have, you know, 30, 40, 50 people tearing down the lies of Rachel Maddow, and then you have one or two people who are incessantly posting, constantly trying to, oh, Trump's a rape, you know, trying to throw their insults in there. And the people aren't having it. I think they're very sick and tired of the divisive nature of the last 8 years. They were tired of being lied to. They're tired of being promised one thing and watching another thing being done. And I think the people are just looking, I mean, when you look at what happened during this last election cycle, the people overwhelmingly said no to more of an Obama-era extension through Hillary Clinton, and they wanted something different. The only the biggest wall I see for Trump is being able to, even if he does everything right, the media is not going to give him any credit for it, and they're going to keep playing into this negative narrative with their bias, with their fake news, with their twisted attempt at common sense. And it's just going to create more anger towards Trump with people who are already angry. And I know there's a lot of people who are uncertain about what to expect during this presidency. And I hope he follows through with his promises and does what he said he's going to do. Because that would be a huge change from what we've had in any time I can remember in history since I've been alive. Yeah, so here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Good job. Good job as I walked in front of the camera as I had a sneezing fit there. I apologize.
Happens.
Oh, wow. Anyway. It's just amazing to see some of the subjects being discussed. And folks, we go to the dark places on the internet, so you don't have to. Of course, mother sues to stop Bible classes in West Virginia schools.
What was that?
Mother sues to stop Bible classes in West Virginia schools. You've got this. In Morgantown, a kindergartner's mother sued her public school system in West Virginia, saying a 75-year-old practice of putting kids in Bible classes violates U.S. and state constitution. Now,
do you think somebody paid her to do that?
I do. Because in my view, behind most lawsuits, there is, unless it's a personal injury suit, it's suits like this.
Because
sure, I think
she's not suing for money, I imagine. She's suing to get that removed from the curriculum.
Well, and she's identified as Jane Doe in the federal lawsuit. So, backed by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Gee whiz. Huh.
There it is. Mickey
okay.
Weinstein,
right.
Harvey Weinstein,
right.
Whatever his name is. He's the militant anti-Christian, take Bibles out of the hotels, don't let anybody in the military even be able to look at a Bible or have one open on their desk. You agree not to even, read the... I remember just recently there was a story where he helped another soldier sue the commanding officer because the guy had a Bible just open on his desk, wasn't reading, it wasn't even at his desk. And another a serviceman came in for something, saw the Bible and was triggered.
Right.
And ran to the Freedom From Religion Foundation where the Weinstein guy took up the case.
Yeah, so there's that. And then, of course, you got Gloria Allred, who's seeking public donations to support that summer, Sumner Zervos, the lawsuit against Trump. I looked at that. To me, it's without merit as far as I'm concerned. You know what I'm talking about. Gloria Allred, she's a high-profile California attorney. She's collecting people's donations to support the case filed against Donald Trump. And that's the thing. You become high-profile, and everyone, you just know this. You can become high profile and you get sued. It's
part of the process.
Just take it to the bank. All right.
You don't have to do anything wrong.
No. Well, of course, Donald Trump here, the former apprentice consistent Sumner Zervos is suing Trump for defamation after she says she says he lied about touching her. Nee, 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 nee. Are you, okay. Here, I'm going to launch this for our legal fees so we can sue Trump because he lied when he said he didn't touch her. Now we're going to sue her because he's such a bad person. And, look, even if this was Bill Clinton in this case, okay.
No, that doesn't compute because Bill Clinton has a history of sexual assaults and rapes.
I guess what I'm saying is the whole process, this Gloria Allred, that makes me sick. Even if the defendant in this case was, I don't care who the defendant is, this process makes me sick. Now, it's more believable with Clinton, obviously. You're right.
Yeah.
But this, come on. Again, it's he hurt my feelings when he said I lied. Gosh. So yeah, expect that. Expect it. It's going to happen. And of course, everyone wants to impeach Trump already. And we see that. Let's not wait to see anything he does. Let's go try to impeach him right now. And of course the fact that, those little sounds you hear, folks, you hear those little sounds, those little popping sounds, kind of like little explosions. Those are the sounds of the progressives' heads exploding. It might be in your neighbor, it might be down the road. And expect it to continue for a while. You'll be driving around all of a sudden you're
yeah.
What was that? I don't know, honey. Oh, you know what? I know. That was Nancy's head exploding. Nancy, the progressive now over the LGBT supporter, that was her head exploding. And then you're driving, you know, or you're out there and say you're out there shoveling driveway or whatever, walking your dog, and you hear, oh, well, what was that? Well, that was Ron's head exploding. You see, he's a big proponent of global warming and, you know.
Switching gears here in the last minute before bring on our guest. No, I want to hit this.
Right.
There's two stories about CNN and fake news. YMCA accused of censorship after banning CNN from TV after getting complaints that it was fake news. Not long after President-elect Trump accused CNN of being fake and refused to take questions from CNN reporter, the Valspirio family YMCA has declared the channel off-limits in its workout rooms due to the concern that CNN is not a reputable news organization and does not tell the truth. Now, in a separate story, Nancy Sinatra slams CNN and congratulates Trump and asks CNN, "Why do you lie, CNN?" as they tried to spin a story.
You lie.
Daughter of
you
Frank lie. Sinatra, Nancy, accused CNN of deliberately twisting a comment she made in reference to President Trump before congratulating Trump on his inauguration. Nancy Sinatra's not happy using Trump using her father's song at the inauguration, CNN said. And she replied, "That's not true. I never said that. CNN, why do you lie?" So the...
I agree. No.
There's enough stuff going on in the world. I don't understand why these people have to just
constantly
lie. I guess it's what they've always done. It's in their nature. All right. When we come back, we are going to be joined... Oh, goodness. By Samuel Culper. And then after that, Dr. Ted Brewer will be our guest from 8 to 10, covering a number of stories he researched today and put a lot of work into getting together. So we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. So happy to have you along with us. We really appreciate your joining us, and thank you for your belief and your trust in us as we see the events unfold today, very historic events. Whether you're, regardless of which side of the political aisle you're on, I think the fact that this is a historic day should resonate with everyone if you're an American. And, absolutely. But let me ask you, folks, I'm talking to business. Well, anyone, do you run a small business or manage one? Do you? Are you responsible for the human resource, take care of personnel? Maybe you have a couple of dozen people. Maybe you've got up to 100 people. I don't know. If you know how hard, difficult it is, the daily grind, for example, of resolving payroll issues, answering questions, just putting out fires, chasing down data, filing, organizing. Have you been involved in that? You know, pretty soon you got a file cabinet full of employee files, and then you got to be sure that you're 100% with respect to the law. Well, I've got something for you. BambooHR.com. You're not going to forget the name. BambooHR.com. What is BambooHR.com? It's the complete online HR management software for small to medium-sized businesses. It's a simple central system for keeping organized and detailed records for every employee. No more file cabinets, no more spreadsheets, no more messy whiteboards, no more papers everywhere. Hey, did you forget to log an employee's time off? Or did you forget that they were out last Monday? Well, Bamboo HR does it for you. BambooHR.com does everything for you. I've learned this. I've taken it for a test drive. I like it. Look, do you have a confidential salary history filed in paper employee files? Do you know that as an investigator, I've actually, a number of different times, been called out to Fortune 100 companies because of, people looking at people accessing data improperly. Now you've got it all on one place online, everything in one place, job and salary history, vacation, sick days, benefits, training history, so much more. We have a limited offer for you. Visit BambooHR.com. That's BambooHR.com. Enter our, or click on the mic and enter our code HH to get a 14-day trial. I'm going to tell you, you try this, you're a business owner, managing employees, you try this, you will be so impressed. It's great. HR Paperwork Solutions made easy. That is bamboohr.com, and enter our code HH.
Right now in this segment, we have a first-time guest coming on, and I'm sure you'll hear him not only today, but again in the future, Samuel Culper of Austin, Texas. He's a military veteran and a former private contractor, the editor of Forward Observer, who teaches military intelligence gathering techniques to preparedness-minded civilians. Mr. Culper, welcome to the show.
All right, gentlemen. Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You have a very interesting background, and you've used your military service back home to teach civilians a number of things that they would not learn unless they were themselves in the military. Can you tell us about the battle tracking and some of the military intelligence techniques that you do teach?
Yeah, absolutely. Real-world scenario. So today, myself and a team of really great volunteers spent since 8 o'clock this morning battle tracking the riots and protests in Washington, D.C. surrounding the inauguration. And so battle tracking is a system whereby we gather raw data and we find ways to put it on a map. And so after a period of time, we really have a very good picture of the security situation in any given area. And so as we have events not just in D.C. but all across the country, especially in metropolitan areas, it's important for us to be able to, in our own local areas, be able to do that. And that's one of the things that I teach, and I'm happy to do it.
The gathering intelligence is, we've seen the importance increase, especially in the military and the white papers and documents they put out, the HUMIT and the human intelligence gathering, the technological intelligence gathering that's done, the data mining. In your mission statement, you talk about how intelligence drives the fight. How important is this aspect? A lot of people, when they think of battle, they just think of the conflict. They don't think of the preparation that go in beforehand. And we've kind of lost our way since, well, not lost our way, the way has changed since, the Revolutionary War, where you had battle maps and strategies, and now it's more less about soldiers and guerrilla warfare, more about, bombing and strategic strikes. But can you share with us the importance of the intelligence in a battle? Gathering intelligence?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's say that you and I are playing chess. And how much easier is chess when you can see my pieces? Well, now let's put up a blinder where you can't see my pieces. And so just understanding the way the battlefield, because a chessboard is essentially a battlefield, understanding what the battlefield looks like is a critical part of a commander's picture. And really, a commander cannot operate without this critical intelligence. Napoleon was famous for saying war is 90% information. And he used to send his staff officers out to gather maps and books about these places where he was planning his campaigns. And so all throughout history, we've seen the importance of whether or not it was called intelligence gathering, of intelligence gathering. And so we've moved from scouts on foot and horseback into today of satellites and, very skilled human intelligence operatives. And so having access to intelligence information is not something that we just get overnight. It takes time to build up. And specifically for communities, I really highly recommend four different intelligence disciplines. And these can all be developed. We don't need billion-dollar budgets to do many of these things. The first is open source intelligence. And we can find lots and lots of information, just like we've done all day today on Twitter, Facebook, Periscope, Instagram, all sorts of places where people are just freely providing information. And a lot of criminals provide information online. We can find out a lot of information about associations and locations based on social media. And so that's a really valuable tool that I think, unfortunately, most folks overlook.
We could have just watched your just hooked onto your site instead of looking at our all the multiple feeds that we were looking at. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, you were practicing open source intelligence gathering, and so you intuitively got it. Now all we need is a process and kind of a structured method of how we exploit all these mediums, and that's something that I'm really big on and really enjoy teaching. And there's some other intelligence gathering disciplines that I'd be happy to teach and to talk about.
Well,
should I
yeah go yeah. ahead go ahead
Oh, sure. Yeah, so, you know, that's the one that's most overlooked, open source intelligence. With signals intelligence, you know, we think about wiretapping and satellites picking up cell phone and metadata and location data. And we can't do cell phones, but not legal at least, but we can do a lot of those things too. You know, just with a simple radio receiver, listening to a police scanner is a really great way that we can collect that kind of information. And there are other ways as well. Imagery intelligence, you know, Google Earth, and now Google Earth Pro is free, and there's tons of information about your local area. And so if we're preparing for a disaster or preparing to fight a war, understanding the physical terrain and critical infrastructure is so important. And then finally, the last way is human intelligence, and that's getting out, talking to people, eliciting information from people who may be unwittingly providing us that information. And, you know, those are the four ways that I highly recommend that everyone investigate.
The intelligence, is there one area that's more important than others, or all of them combined to give you that big picture?
Yeah, well, you know, my job in the Army was an all-source intelligence analyst, and so it was important for me to kind of have my fingers, you know, checking the pulse of all sorts of types of information from different sources and different methods of collection. And so it really is mission-dependent. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to dump all this information on you.
No.
I know it can be difficult to grasp for a lot of people, and I think that's one reason why people avoid it, because they say, oh, it's so much information. But human intelligence, get out and talk to your neighbors. Get out and talk to your sheriff's deputies or police officers, because most people are willing to help if they can. And so just starting to gather information that I don't have access to as a civilian is a really great way to kind of understand the security situation, the crime situation in your own area, too.
All right. To what end? To what end do you do this? Do you teach others to do this? To what end? I mean, what's the objective here?
Well, ultimately, America's changing, and we're very likely going to see domestic conflict on this continent, as we've watched it for hundreds of years. Really just destroyed Europe twice. And I think maybe not to the degree of World War I or World War II, but we're going to have another kind of civil disturbance in America, and it may not even parallel the Civil War, but we're going to have conflict in America. And so I'm really big about the preservation of liberty, about the Western society, the values of the founders of this country. And so first and foremost, really it's about community security. If everyone in this nation, everyone of like mind, every constitutionalist can secure our community, then we're going to be much better off for, you know, restoring vast, vast parts of this nation, whether we drag DC kicking and screaming or not. And so really the end is to weather whatever bad situation happens, whether it's a domestic conflict or we just slowly become more like Latin America, where there's just crime and corruption, and there's really not much that we can do about it because those things get so embedded.
You, one of the things before, I know our time's short today, that I wanted to talk to you about, you're an international relations writer on U.S.-China relations. So I want to make sure I bring that up because I want to touch on that before we let you go, especially with this transition of power. And you just reiterated something that we talk about a lot, about the need for the community and the people to be aware of their surroundings and to know the people who are around them. That way, if something does go bad, you have a much better chance of survival if you band together than if you're out on your own. And just imagine being in a place where things go bad. You don't even know if you can trust your own neighbors. That's not a situation anybody wants to be in. And that's just some of the basic things that you can, that's basic to your survival. You produce an executive intelligence summary on a weekly basis. What do you focus on in that?
Well, it's structured as well. I break it down into four what we call priority intelligence requirements, and there's four areas. So the first area is systems disruption. So we're overly dependent on the internet, on the grid, on this digital financial infrastructure we have, and it's becoming increasingly vulnerable. And the closer we get to a war with another nation state, especially against a near peer adversary like China, the more likely it is that we're going to experience systems disruption. So the first thing I talk about is where and how that could happen, and really to what end, how does it affect me on my doorstep or in my community. The second PIR looks at the outbreak of war. So I have a Russia and China sit rep every week, and a situation report, and I talk about what's developed this week and if we're inching closer to war with any one of those nations. PIR3, Priority Intelligence Requirement Number 3, looks at sociology, social demographic changes, any kind of governmental or political instability. You know, one thing we're obviously tracking right now is organized political violence, and there are definite indicators that the left is organizing to, you know, not just crimes of opportunity, but of organized political violence, and so that's one thing I'm really looking at. And then finally, the fourth is a financial infrastructure, economic. And with this globalized world, events that happen in China or in Europe could affect America as well. And so it's not just a simple matter of let's look out our doorstep and engage the local economy because we're so interconnected.
If we look at those four, excuse me, and let's take away the threat of war, like international conflict with our nation, do you find more threats economically or more threats due to the dependence on the grid and the internet that you mentioned first? Or are they both the same?
Yeah, I would say they're different risks. The cyber threat specifically to critical infrastructure, the risk is way higher because it's easy for the power grid to be turned off in an instant. Whereas the economy could just be continued to sluggish. We still live, you know, we still have a $15 or $16 trillion economy. It's not going to zero overnight. But the power grid could absolutely go to zero overnight. And so I would definitely say that the risk to systems, the risk of systems disruption to critical infrastructure is by far a greater risk.
And so much of our economy is now electronic and digital. So just by default, if the power grid were taken out by an EMP type device, it would wipe out most of the economy too. So I guess that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and also I just want to say this: it's important for us to understand this concept of resilience. And yeah, an EMP, our national economy would be destroyed, but the economy overall would not go to zero because we would still barter, we would still trade, and so understanding these threats also helps us to be more resilient.
Absolutely. As I said, we're going to have you back on in the future. We only have one segment here with you folks. We're talking with Samuel Culper. You can go to, he's the editor of the website Forward Observer. He's an Army veteran and a private contractor who teaches military gathering techniques to preparedness-minded individuals and does a lot more. Folks, go to the website Forward Observer and check this out. And you're doing a giveaway today on your website, is that correct?
I didn't plan on it, but yeah, I just want everyone to know.
let's force you to
get
one,
some
right?
traffic to your site.
What am I giving away? Oh yeah, drop on by the site, readfomag.com. I write in articles about intelligence, not really at an academic level, but at a layman's level, how the average American can put these systems and processes into play for their own communities. And you know, if you want access to our intelligence reporting that goes out every week, we'd love to have you be a member. We have a lot of other training resources as well. I teach classes also in person, and I'll be in Nashville next month and in Orlando in March. And I'd like to invite you to. I didn't plan on doing a giveaway, but if either one of you would like to attend any one of our classes, come on. I'd love to have you.
I apologize. In the email there underneath your information, I read this wrong. It's a Survival Blog nonfiction writing contest, but you guys are affiliated with Survival Blog.
Yeah, we're friends of the folks who run Survival Blog, and you know, I've followed Survival Blog for almost a decade now, and so we're. We're happy to have our articles posted on there.
Sorry about
no problem.
We got just about nine minutes left in this segment. If we could touch on the U.S.-China relations and U.S.-Russia relations, because we just saw Trump transition. We see so much in the news. China's banned the live feeds of the inauguration and warned their independent and state-sponsored media not to lead with those stories. Some said they're trying to figure out Trump. Some others say it's because of his posturing with Taiwan and the rhetoric about trade deals and China's currency manipulation. Well, the article said alleged currency manipulation.
And his Russian report, too, about
the false hacking.
You know.
Oh, the hacking.
Yeah.
It looks like with Trump coming in, we're taking a we're getting more realigned with Russia and having more fallout with China. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think China becomes the greater of the two risks with Donald Trump now in the Oval Office. Donald Trump has done things that no other American president has really done. I will say this, and Bill Clinton in the back in the mid 1990s, he did send a carrier strike group into the South China Sea, in the Taiwan Straits, in between Taiwan and China, kind of as a message that we're here to protect Taiwan. And then we have Bush and Obama, and they were both tested by China early on in their presidencies, and so we could absolutely see the same thing with Donald Trump. But I really think that President Xi in China is taken aback, and I don't think that Chinese policymakers know exactly what to make, because who knows what Donald Trump is going to do in the next 100 days. You know, I mean, we have his 100-day plan, but who knows what his policies actually will be, and it may be the case that those policies are still forming, you know, for himself. But we look at General Mattis, who's just confirmed as the Secretary of Defense. Some would say the Secretary of Offense, he is highly capable. And I think any economic policy that we have towards China, essentially wrestling back this economic advantage that China's built in for themselves over the past few decades, I think does carry a risk of war. And, you know, the question is, can we actually fight a war in China's backyard or front yard, as it were? And that's a big question mark. I would say probably not. One of the greatest risks that we have with a war with China is if they can't compete with us militarily, we're very likely to see, or conventionally rather, militarily, we're very likely to see asymmetric attacks, and that could be economic warfare, it could be political warfare, it would almost certainly include some level of cyber warfare. And we look at Chinese military doctrine, and we say, look, any attempt to say that to defend Taiwan, essentially what they see as redrawing the national sovereignty, the boundaries of the Chinese border, is an offense that is eligible for a nuclear strike. And so, you know, are we willing to risk Taiwan for California, you know, for instance? And so that's one of the main risks that we see. And is China, are they crazy enough to do it? I would say probably.
That's interesting. We see there's definitely growing rifts. I wanted to ask you this, and the banning of the inauguration, there was two trains of thought that went separate ways. One was that they couldn't figure out Trump. They didn't want to give him any press because they don't know how this is going to turn out with him. And two, there were some people were speculating that the rise in populism that has surrounded him, the communist Chinese government is afraid of that spreading in China. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we're looking at, there are more Christians in China today than official Communist Party members. And so, you know, China, it's just like America. It has a lot of sub-regions, and Western China, we've referred to that as the Wild West for a long time. And, there are places in Western China that aren't even controlled by the Central Communist Party. And so, I would say that China, look, economically, China is... they're way more fragile than they were this time last year and in previous years. And we see the real potential for China to go through their own recession. And what is that going to do to China? Could it eventually end up toppling the Chinese Communist Party? Probably not. But should the right set of circumstances occur, should the Trump administration apply pressure where it needs to be applied, I think that the China problem could take a turn for the worse and end up in war and potentially even with loss of national power for the Chinese military and really for the Chinese Communist Party.
So like we saw with the fall of the USSR, the different maneuverings that America did to make that crumble, is what you're saying we could see also because China's economy is ripe for some kind of correction or recession. And I think, was it last year, we saw them named as the... number one economic powerhouse in the world. They did, or it was trade, one of the two, imports or exports. Okay, then if we can move to Russia for a little bit. Our relations with Russia, despite what the media says about the influence that allegedly Russia had in the elections, which has been unproven, are relations with Russia getting better under Trump and the Trump administration?
With Vladimir Putin, absolutely. You know, we see Vladimir Putin saying, look, we're willing to restore normal diplomatic ties with America, and we're willing to work with America. We look at retired General Michael Flynn, who is the national security advisor for Trump, and in his book Field of Fight, he names Islamic Jihad as the number one world threat right now. And so I do think that certain parts of the Trump administration are looking for opportunities to say, look, how can we work with Russia? Russia has the same fundamental problem with Islamic terrorism as we do. And if both of us can be committed to fight Islamic terrorism, then there could be potential for us to work together. But look, we're still looking at NATO that's clawing its way, you know, trying to remain relevant, trying to prevent any further. You know, this whole thing is just a mess in Europe because, you know, NATO continues to expand, even though apparently they told Russia back in the 90s that they weren't. And so NATO expands. Putin sees this as aggression, and he says, well, we're not, you know, we have to defend against it. We have to take preparations to do that. So I would say relations have improved with America. With European NATO member countries, not so much.
All right, folks, we're talking with Samuel Culper. He's the editor of Forward Observer. You want to tell people where they can find you and give out any information you want if you want people to contact you? Or
yeah, sure. You can go to our website. It's at readfomag.com, and it's readfomag.com. We have lots of free articles and free content on there. I do a weekly podcast as well where I talk about a lot of these issues.
I heard one of yours, and fantastic information, by the way.
Oh, thank you, sir. Yeah, thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. And the podcast is free, and there's a lot of great information on there. Thank you.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's excellent. We'll definitely have you back in the future. Maybe we can spend at least an hour talking more about, you know, the battle tracking, and we can get into that a little bit more. And we'll have to stay in touch, and hopefully one day we can check out some of your.
Yeah, I got a question for you. Russia in 20 seconds. Russia hacked, and I know that we touched on this. Hacked? No, we'll deal with Russia with respect to influence the elections. Okay. Your thoughts? 20 seconds.
Yeah, does Russia hack America? Will Russia continue to hack American systems? Of course they will. This is nation-state espionage. We do it all the time against each other. Really, the crux of the issue is, did Russia release those emails? And I would say there's a potential for that to have happened, but to date there's no evidence. And some people in the intelligence community say, well, of course there's no evidence. But I'm leaning towards no, but again, without the evidence, I really can't make that determination.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you so much, sir.
Yeah, thank you for your time. Again, that's Samuel Culper. We look forward to talking with you here in the future. Yeah,
absolutely, man. Well, what an informative, absolutely informative, wow. Thank you, John.
Learn more about these intelligence gathering techniques.
Yeah, and thank you to our guest. God bless.
Thank you.
Up next, Dr. Ted Breuer of HealthMasters.com will be our guest. He's going to be with us until the end of the program. We're going to get his take on the inauguration, on the Trump presidency, and anything else that he wants to get into right after these messages. Stay with us.